The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
That's from the rally, Donald Trump's rally in Wellington, Ohio, over the weekend. Something like 30,000 people turned out for President Trump, to much like they did when he was campaigning. Quite unlike the fake president. And I think it was that Gateway Pundit that said that if you add all of his rallies together from last year, remember the hula hoop rallies, they wouldn't have had as many people as that event just there. Saturday night, Wellington, Ohio, the president taking to the campaign trail yet again. And how much coverage does it get? Was it on Fox? Was it on CNN? It's ignored. They want to cancel him. They want to blot him out. And yet, you go to Right Side Broadcasting, 2.3 million viewers Saturday evening, and then they post the edited down version of just the speech the next day, 107,000, and then all of the likes and dislikes, don't even get me into that. Compare it to Biden. Over at Rumble, 809,000 views. Think about any former president who can get that kind of an audience after they're supposedly done with. They're over and done with. They're out of office. Go back to even Ronald Reagan. He was in, I guess, sharp decline in the 1990s. But still, go back to Bill Clinton or George W. Bush or Barack Obama. After leaving office, and then tens of thousands of people, they know what's going on. And as the president said on Saturday night, the fake news media, they know who actually won on November 3rd, and that's why they're working so hard to blot out anyone that would dare suggest that there was massive fraud. All that and much, much more to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We welcome you back. We appreciate you, and we thank you for joining us, for making time out of your day to be one of a growing number of listeners or viewers of this program. You can listen to it on CRN Digital Talk Radio, the third channel or channel 3 on that particular platform that takes the audio of this program into 11 million homes around the nation here in the United States. But of course, if you want to get to the full video or the video broadcast of this program, you have to do that exclusively at thetrumpet.com website. You can go to thetrumpet.com/live and get to this live broadcast, which plays at 9 a.m. every weekday morning on the West Coast, noon right in the middle of the day on the East Coast, of course, 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone, and of course, at your time, wherever you might be listening from, all over the world. I'll just mention quickly the weekend edition. Yesterday, a pretty strong program as we got into the false January 6th narrative and how the DOJ and the FBI have been weaponized to not only go after those Trump supporters that were there at that protest, but to, in some cases, deprogram them, just like Katie Couric said back in January. What are we going to do to deprogram these people that turn out in droves like you saw in that footage? Tens of thousands of Trump supporters, still wildly popular. He's coming back, as we've said so many times on this program. One note regarding the Celtic Throne performance. They're en route to Little Rock, Arkansas, even as we speak. That'll be tonight, another performance in Little Rock. If you're anywhere around Little Rock, Arkansas, then you've got to make your way downtown this evening, 7:30. Go to the website, CelticThrone.com, and that can take you right through to the venue for this evening. And you can order your tickets and watch a wonderful, wonderful production. So positive, so uplifting. It just has you smiling from ear to ear as you watch it and as you leave the production. And you've heard so much of the feedback on this show coming from many of you that have seen this incredible production. Well, as I say, there's lots to get to on today's program. I've had a large section in my notes on the vaccines and Dr. Fauci and COVID-19 and the pandemic. The president, incidentally, said that they used COVID-19 to steal the election. They used it as a pretext to have all of this mass mail-in voting. We'll come to some of those sound bites here in just a moment. But suffice it to say, on the vaccine front, don't take it. Don't. I'm slipping into whispering mode. That's now something to do, I guess, for speakers. Don't take the vaccine. It's dangerous. We have more and more articles just piling high on the, in some cases, deadly side effects for, and young people even, a 13-year-old. I won't have time to get into it today. There's just too much other news that we need to cover. But suffice it to say, there are some very, very dangerous side effects. We'll come to that perhaps tomorrow, maybe later on this week. We'll also get to some of the sound bites from that rally at Wellington, Ohio, and also talk more about the election steal. This is going to be a big week as far as news coming out of Arizona as they've wrapped up the hand recount and are expected to, these Arizona Republicans, they're expected to come out with a preliminary report here in the next couple of days. So we'll certainly keep our eyes out for that. I want to begin, though, this opening a news segment by just, again, referring to the Trumpet magazine. Tomorrow's news today, we so often say. You go to page 8 in this particular issue. It's a woman's world. It's a woman's world. And then just think about some of the developments just in the past few days. Mr. Hilliker there, Joel Hilliker, he's talking about the prime minister's wife now. It used to be his girlfriend, the prime minister of England, Boris Johnson. And just how much influence and power this woman had. And nobody voted her into office. And then he talks about Meghan Markle and what she's done to really divide the royal family of Britain. And then you have these revelations about Matt Hancock. He finally resigned. He and Boris, they tried to keep him in there. He tried to stay in place, but he just couldn't. He couldn't come away without just being, totally destroyed politically because of his gross hypocrisy. Never mind the adultery. I mean, that's quite all right. But to violate social distancing when you're the king of social distancing, it was just too much, I suppose. But again, to look at some of the points that Mr. Hilliker makes in this article, let me just read you a couple of paragraphs. Mr. Hilliker says, the British Spectator calls it the first girlfriend problem. And he quotes the Spectator in this piece. The feeling is growing that the first girlfriend wants political power without the trouble of having to run for office and to wield it without any resulting criticism. This is not a sustainable state of affairs. It says further on, there are powerful points. This is Mr. Hilliker now. There are powerful points to be made in this debate. But for now, let's focus on the issue at hand. Women who are not in office, but who are actually ruling. They're not even in office, and yet they rule. And then you consider this woman, the one that Matt Hancock was having an affair with, Gina Calandangelo, I think is how you say her name, and I gave you this quote last week from the Times, I believe it is, and they wrote this back in November before anyone knew about this affair, this adulterous affair. It says, one source said, before Matt does anything big, he'll speak to Gina. She knows everything. She has access to lots of confidential information. Now, before the last few days, most people in Britain didn't even know who this woman was. And yet look at the power, just like Mr. Hilliker says in that piece. Look at the authority. Women are ruling. Whether you think that they should or not, and we'll leave aside Isaiah 3 for a moment, unelected women are ruling, just as the Bible prophesies. That's one of many points that can be made on this scandal. And no wonder, by the way, that so many, and this is another thing, another story that's blotted out, tens of thousands of protesters taking to the streets of London because they want their freedom back. They want the freedom to be able to move wherever, like obviously Matt Hancock can. He can do whatever he wants. There's one rule for the elites and then another one for the ordinary people. There was this video, by the way, where they just had a camera on the street in London showing all of these people in fast motion. They fast forwarded it. This is the kind of story right here that the UK media even, and they're a little bit better than the corrupt propaganda media here in the U.S., but they won't show you this. They won't show you how wildly unpopular all of these restrictive measures, they're invading your privacy, as a couple of articles bring out this morning, even as Matt Hancock is caught in an adulterous affair, and then he gets in front of the microphone and says, hey now, this is a private matter, so leave me alone, leave me alone. This is from Fraser Nelson this morning. It says, Mr. Hancock was one of a tiny number of ministers who decided that self-isolation rules ought to be a matter for the police, not left as a matter of guidance and common sense. Yeah, the police, you see. This man says, if you're violating social distancing, even if it's in the privacy of your own home, well, the police should have the authority to bust in there and enforce these rules that I've made. It says, under his emergency laws, personal lives were criminalized. That's right. Fraser Nelson says, Mr. Hancock has always been one of the most emphatic for the rules. In internal government debates, he has invariably pushed for the toughest restrictions and wanted 10-year jail sentences as a penalty for trying to dodge draconian quarantine rules. This is from the man who himself broke the rules in about the worst possible way you could imagine, at least if you have any respect left for the Ten Commandments. I'll get to that in a second. It quotes Hancock here. I make no apologies for the strength of these measures, he said. They'd target a, quote, minority who don't want to follow the rules. That's quoting Matt Hancock. I mean, he's really serious about you obeying the rules of quarantine. It says here, when two women were fined by police for walking together, Mr. Hancock was unforgiving. Every time you try to flex the rules, he said, that could be fatal. I mean, it's that dangerous. You break the COVID-19 lockdown rules, and you could be guilty of murder, he said. Says, this is the irony of his request on Friday for privacy for my family on this personal matter. There's no doubt his family deserves it, but a great many other families would have been grateful for more privacy over the last 15 months. A great many other families are saying, hey, leave us alone. That's what those protesters on the streets of London were saying. Leave us alone so that we can live our lives. So that we can do our jobs. So that we can try to make an income. So that we can provide for our families. So that we can love our grandparents. Love them enough to give them a hug. It says, instead, the Tory government decided to legislate for what people do in their own homes, and in so doing, set up a system where people came to worry that they'd be reported to the police, perhaps by their neighbors, if they stretched the rules by inviting children over to play in their back gardens. It says, Greater Manchester Police issued a statement boasting that they had raided a family home, to break up a child's birthday party. They were boasting about it, the law enforcement in the UK. Last week, I told you about law enforcement. Well, actually, it was on yesterday's program, the weekend edition. How they're going after anyone that was at a protest on January the 6th, even if it's a grandmother, even if it's someone that just wandered up and didn't even go close to the Capitol. But you got to get him in jail. He's dangerous. He's part of the white rage. This is from Tim Stanley. Listen to this. This is an excellent point. He says, it says something about how morally twisted the 21st century is that Matt Hancock resigned, not over adultery, but over breaking social distancing rules, as if the latter is more serious than the former. That's right. As far as Matt Hancock and others among the ruling elites are concerned, social distancing in this climate, that's one of the Ten Commandments. That's more important than the Ten Commandments. Adultery, not a big deal. Not a big deal at all. Destroying the traditional family. No harm there. But if you dare hug someone or get close enough to someone to violate the rules established by Matt Hancock, he was the health secretary. He, like I read to you on Friday, he was probably more responsible for Britain heading into the second lockdown than anyone else. These people are drunk on power. You look at what's happening around, I think it's South Australia. Forget the name of the state. Maybe that is the name. In any event, back into lockdown. Got to do it. We found two or three more cases. The insanity. Suicide. National suicide. Because of people like this. It says here, in the 24 hours between exposure and resignation, during which he obviously thought he might be able to cling on, he described his affair as a personal matter, and the PM considered the matter closed. I gave you that on Friday. Boris Johnson said, hey, he's apologized and it's over. It's over. And they were both hoping that he could keep his position, but the public outrage was just too intense. Mr. Hancock was using adultery as a shield, as if the subject were so sensitive, almost sympathetic, that society would draw a veil over it. Listen, you've got to respect my privacy here. The truth is that it is utterly awful to be cheated on. You feel stupid, you blame yourself. We can call it private if that helps, but the whole world is talking about Mrs. Hancock's husband. Adultery has very public consequences for the partners, for the kids, and for the weasel himself, whose honor is forever in doubt. It says, if a politician can lie to their family, to the people who are supposed to matter the most, why do you think he wouldn't lie to his constituents? It's just all they do. They lie. And we can't keep up with all of them on this program, as much as we expose. Stanley says, I'm a sucker for second chances, and Mr. Hancock has apologized to his family. The striking thing, however, about Mr. Hancock's resignation video, he posted that on Saturday, I believe, which appeared to be recorded behind a bush, is that he doesn't mention them at all. Why would he? It's a personal matter. Doesn't have anything to say publicly about the shame and the humiliation brought upon his own family. He's embarrassed. He's ashamed that he broke the rules on social distancing. It says, well, Mr. Hancock, so are most of the things you interfered with in the last 18 months. We were banned from seeing our relatives. We were banned from church. We were banned from school. There's another video widely shared when the scandal broke of a socially distanced funeral in Milton Keynes, at which a son instinctively moved his chair nearer to his mother to comfort her and was stopped by a member of staff. Someday we shall look back on these restrictions and think we were mad to follow them, the only explanation being that we believed they were necessary and that we were all in it together, that we were stupid enough to take Mr. Hancock at his word. It says, finally, perhaps now, when a security guard bears down on us in a mini mart for not wearing a mask, we should follow Matt's example instead and say, I'm sorry, sir, but this is a personal matter, and I consider the matter closed. That's from Tim Stanley at the Daily Telegraph. Shifting gears now to President Trump, this rally he had over the weekend, Saturday night, in Ohio, Wellington, Ohio. He highlighted the stark contrast between his administration and that of his opponent, the fake presidency. They put America last, said President Trump, and we put America first. It's just that simple. He made the point that we were making over the weekend with the weekend edition. He said that the Biden administration, they've been weak on China, Iran, trade, the economy, and so on. But they've been very strong on weaponizing law enforcement to go after conservatives. They've been very strong on that. Weaponize the DOJ, weaponize the FBI, and go after your political opponents. He referred to Rudy Giuliani and that communist court that's trying to take away his law license in New York. Here's clip 13.
But now if you question an election and you fight for the Constitution like the greatest mayor in the history of the city of New York, Rudy Giuliani, they cancel your law license. Radical left-wing Democrats, they cancel your law license, and the FBI agents go and raid your home like they did to Rudy Giuliani. Think of it. He was the greatest mayor in the history of the city. He took a city that was almost as bad as it is now with crime, and he solved the problem, and he made it a hot, great place. And this is the way they treat him. It's a very, very sad and very, very dangerous time for our country. This corrupt establishment is censoring, blacklisting, and persecuting people who call them out on their flagrant lies and deceit, like the results of the election.
That's why you get canceled. You call them out on their flagrant lies, as he said there, and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. He had quite a lot to say. This is why it's not carried live on some of the networks, because he won't let it go. To his credit, he won't let November 3 go. The obvious fraud. Listen again to his rally from Saturday night, clip 12.
The radical left is trying to rip our nation apart, and there is no depth to which they will not sink. You've seen it, and you've seen it strongly. Just can't have it. There's no better example than the election that we talk about so proudly because we did so well. The 2020 presidential election was rigged. We won the election in a landslide. You know it. I know it. And you know who else knows it? The fake news knows it.
The fake news knows all about it. That's why they were coming out in full force over the weekend, pulling Al Gore out of retirement even, looking for every never-Trump Republican they could find to denounce the audit efforts, the audits that are sweeping across the swing states. Nearly finished in Arizona, about to begin in Georgia. And what domino will fall after that? And what kind of momentum will these forensic audits have once Arizona is revealed? Once the corruption is, how do you think the masses of Americans will react when they learn that this was a steal in broad daylight? So many of them know it, even as it is. But once the evidence comes in, well, as I say, you can see why they're looking for everyone like Mitt Romney that they can find to put on the Sunday shows and to talk about the big lie even before the report on the audit comes in. This was Romney yesterday on one of the talk shows, clip six.
Well, I do think it's important for each person to speak the truth and to make clear that the big lie is exactly that. But I also think, frankly, Jake, that here in the U.S., there's a growing recognition that this is a bit like WWF, that it's entertaining, but it's not real.
It's fake, he says. We'll find out what's fake and what's real, probably in just a few more days with respect to one state. So what's the problem? What's the problem? If you have counterfeit bills, you're going to examine each bill and make sure that they're real and get rid of the ones that are fake. That's all that's happening with the forensic audit. They're examining the bills. They're examining the ballots. And so why not wait until the report comes in? Why not wait until the evidence has been looked at? They can't do it. They can't do it. They've got to put out propaganda. They've got to blot out and cancel. You look at the way they're behaving, and you know President Trump is right. I know it, you know it, and they know it as well. They know it, which is why they're trying to cancel it. Here again is Mitt Romney from yesterday, clip seven.
The election is over. It was fair. Look, the president was saying it was crying foul on election night, and actually before election night. And the question is, what were his sources of information? Where did he hear that the election had been fraudulently carried out? Did he hear it from the Justice Department? No. Did he hear it from the intelligence community? No. So where did he hear it from? The MyPillow guy? Rudy Giuliani?
Yep.
What were their sources of information?
So they mock the MyPillow guy, as they say. That Giuliani, he's crazy. He's a clown. But the DOJ, did he get evidence from the deep state? You mean the deep state that was responsible for the Russia collusion hoax? That deep state? That DOJ? Al Gore, I haven't seen him in years, made all his predictions 20 years ago. The world was supposed to have ended by now because of global warming. So they bring Al Gore out of retirement. They bring him out of one of his five or six mansions to give this interview and to talk about the election. Here's the advice that he has for Donald Trump, clip eight.
I would say, please do the right thing. Acknowledge reality. Stop hurting this country. Stop undermining democracy. Honor the great and honorable traditions of the United States of America. This cannot go on the way it is.
The great traditions of the United States, like sending out tens of millions of ballots through the mail, unsolicited, just flying all over the place. We do it all the time, don't we? Nope. Just did it last year. How? Why? COVID. It was a pandemic. We couldn't expect people to come to the ballot box or to come to the voting center and violate the rules of lockdown. Here's what the president said about COVID-19 on Saturday night, clip 14.
They use COVID in order to cheat. They use COVID in order to rig the election and in order to steal the election. They use COVID. That's as simple as it gets.
It really is. He is exactly right. He's exactly right. They used COVID to cheat. Jonathan Carl, he's the left-wing reporter, the communist that works for one of the networks, maybe NBC, had a piece at The Atlantic about Bill Barr. The inside look at the breakup between Bill Barr, the former attorney general, and President Trump. It says here, Barr told me that Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell had been urging him to speak out since mid-November. We need you. This is going back to the election steal on November 3rd. And then Mitch McConnell, again, another, if he's not a never Trump Republican, he's close enough. He's another Mitt Romney. Let's just say that. So he's urging Bill Barr, look, you've got to come out and say something that this wasn't stolen, that there was no cheating here, because you're the attorney general. So Barr was coming under pressure from McConnell. It says, to McConnell, the road to maintaining control of the Senate was simple. Republicans needed to make the argument that with Biden soon to be in the White House, it was crucial that they have a majority in the Senate to check his power. So this is about the runoff election for the two senators from Georgia in early January. It says here, but McConnell also believed that if he openly declared Biden the winner, Barr that is, Trump would be enraged and likely to act to sabotage the Republican Senate campaigns in Georgia. It says Barr related his conversations with McConnell to me, and McConnell confirms the account. So all these deep staters working in the background to try to get rid of Donald Trump, to try to make him go away, to just focus in on that runoff election. When Donald Trump was saying, no, focus in on the fraud. That's how you overturn this. That's how you make things right. So Barr is quoted in this, and this is the quote everyone's drawing attention to over the weekend. It's quoting Barr saying, if there was evidence of fraud, I had no motive to suppress it, but my suspicion all the way along was that there was nothing there. It was all expletive. There was nothing there. And you know what the article says? It says that the DOJ never even conducted a formal investigation into it. They didn't even look into it. And now here comes Bill Barr months later. I knew it was just all crazy. We didn't even have to look into it. So they've got to bring Barr out of retirement. They've got to bring in Al Gore. They've got to bring in Mitt Romney, McConnell. Why? What are they so worried about? Donald Trump released a statement yesterday on Bill Barr. He says, Rhino former attorney, General Bill Barr, failed to investigate election fraud and really let down the American people. Even the scam that took place in Georgia of ballot stuffing on camera, he couldn't see what was wrong with it. Just like he failed to understand the Horowitz report and so on. It says, it's people in authority like Bill Barr that allow the crazed radical left to succeed. He's exactly right. They won't stand up to this communist movement, this communist infiltration, and so they allow it to succeed. Even as they're hunting for grandmama who happened to be in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th. That's where their attention and their focus is. It says here, he and other rhinos in the Republican Party are being used in order to try to convince people that the election was legitimate, when so many incredible facts have now come out to show conclusively that it wasn't. He came in with a semi-bang and went out with a whimper, Bill Barr did. Earlier in his term, Bill Barr went ballistic on CNN with Wolf Blitzer warning Democrats were changing election rules to flood the system with mail-in ballots that, as a matter of logic, are very open to fraud. He's talking about an exchange we've played on this program multiple times. Bill Barr, back in September of last year. Look at how visibly agitated and upset he gets over the prospect of mass mail-in ballots, which is exactly what we got. But this is him before the election, before November 3rd. Watch this exchange between Barr and Wolf Blitzer, clip 15.
Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the voter list when everyone knows those voter lists are inaccurate. People who should get them don't get them, which is what has been one of the major complaints in states that have tried this in municipal elections. And people who get them are not the right people. They're people who have replaced the previous occupant, and they can make them out. And sometimes multiple ballots come to the same address with a whole several generations of occupants. Do you think that's a way to run a vote?
That's exactly how it went down. That's how they ran the vote in Georgia last year. That's how they ran it in Arizona. What happened to Bill Barr? We asked the question a week or two ago with respect to Boris Johnson. What happened to Boris Johnson? What happened to Bill Barr? What do they have on him? Why now does he come forward in the Atlantic, this hit job on Donald Trump? He was singing a different tune, wasn't he, back in September, Here's another clip, clip 16.
Well, this is playing with fire. This is playing with fire. We're a very closely divided country here. And if people have to have confidence in the results of the election and the legitimacy of the government, and people trying to change the rules to this methodology, which, as a matter of logic, is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous. And the people are playing with fire.
Wow, reckless and dangerous to change the rules before the, like they did in, like all the Stacey Abrams rules in Georgia? The rules that changed behind closed doors? All those back channel negotiations between Abrams and Raffensperger to allow cheating on a mass scale? He knew what was going on before the election. And then after the election, he says he knew it was just crazy. Something happened to him. The Donald Trump's, for one, you get some consistency, don't you? He was sounding the alarm. Now, some would say he should have done more himself before the election if he knew that this fraud was coming. But he was sounding the alarm on it before the election. On election night, who can forget when he came before the cameras there in the White House and said, hey, it was a landslide up until 10 p.m. and then they shut everything down. Trump said in his statement, if there was no fraud, why are Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and other states spending so much time and effort on exposing the fraud? If there was no fraud, then why are these states, all of, and you can credit the state Republicans for sure, but before that, it's the people of these states. They know. Sam and I had an email exchange Saturday night as we saw that video. President Trump in Wellington, Ohio. Look at it on Right Side Broadcasting and just scroll down the thousands and thousands of comments. And it seemed like 9 out of 10 said the election was stolen. It's a fraud. People know, and as Trump said at that rally on Saturday night, the fake news media, they know as well. Jake Tapper knows. They all know. Which is why they don't want anything audited. They don't want anyone examining the ballots because they know there's lots and lots of fake ballots. We already know, says President Trump, 101,000 obsolete voters on the rolls in Georgia, including 18,486 dead people. Ballot batches off by up to 17.5% in Maricopa County. These are facts we already know. This is from President Trump's statement. Massive chain of custody problems, thousands of ballots wheeled in through the back door in Fulton County, double feeding ballots in Fulton, nearly 200,000 illegal, indefinitely confirmed votes in Wisconsin that violated voter ID law. Cash for votes scheme in Nevada, illegal alien votes. Election law changes not authorized by the state legislatures. This all happened. This is what we already know. It says, and much more. If Barr felt this way, why did Barr say he was greatly honored and proud to have played a role in the many successes and unprecedented achievements you have delivered for the American people in his final letter that he wrote to me? See, now he comes around and stabs Donald Trump in the back. They were all singing a much, much different tune before. Well, the truth is what'll set us free here. The corruption, the stealing, the theft, the dishonesty, the cheating, all of that's being exposed. And Satan, as I've said so many times before, what he hates, what he fears most is being exposed. When we come back, we'll continue with our study that we got into briefly there at the end of Friday's show on Romans chapter 6. Some call it the baptism chapter. And we'll see as we continue with our study there that when you come out of the world and into God's family and go through the process of baptism and the receipt of God's Spirit, God really and truly does expect a complete and total break from those former ways. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to subscribe to our Trumpet magazine. Tomorrow's News Today, you can call toll-free if you live in the United States and Canada, 1-866-930-3024. Don't forget also to submit some feedback. You can email the show on any topic. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to hear about your listening habits, and we'd love to hear where you come from. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times. But it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
As I said on Friday's show, there's several cases or verses in Romans where Paul is qualifying what he's saying because of those that were followers of Simon Magus and the great false church that were trying to twist and distort the truth of God, turning the grace of God into a license to disobey God's laws. And Paul in Romans 6, he begins the chapter saying, well, should we continue in sin so that grace may abound? God forbid, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We come out of sin. When we come into the church, we come out of sin. And then through the power of God's Spirit, we battle against it for the rest of our converted lives, overcoming and in fact conquering our adversary, the devil. Verse 6 in Romans 6, it says, knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. God wants the body. I mean, it's head to toe in the spiritual sense. It's like what's described in Isaiah 1, what it says about our nations, that there's a sickness there from head to toe. And it's the same when we come out of the world. God just wants to put that body of sin to death. Baptism represents a complete break from that old or former way of life. A complete break from the way of sin. Mr. Armstrong, I gave you this quote on Friday. And it says here, we are not justified by the law. We're justified by the blood of Jesus Christ. But this justification will be given only on the condition that we repent of our transgressions of God's laws. And so it is, after all, only the doers of the law. It's only the doers of the law that shall be justified. That's Mr. Armstrong. And he went on to say, how plain and how beautiful is God's truth. It's just so clear. The plain truth. That's what he named his magazine. It's so clear and it's so plain. And it's the truth, as I said in the first segment, is what sets us free. We have to be lovers of truth. And sometimes the truth hurts, as the saying goes. But we don't want to accept lies. We can't just say, hey, give us smooth things. Tell us smooth things. Read Isaiah 30. And 2 Timothy 4, that's exactly what's prophesied for these last days. People that would say, don't tell us the truth. Just give us the lies, as long as it sounds good. Verse 9, it says, knowing that Christ being raised from the dead dies no more, death has no more dominion over him. So Christ can't die anymore. As a human being, he died, but God raised him by a resurrection. God raised him back to life. And now he's an immortal spirit being. He cannot die. The analogy here is that, and we look at Jesus Christ as our perfect example, like it says in 1 Peter 2, but what Paul is teaching is that once you've repented of sin, you don't want to go back into it. You don't want to go back. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about someone who's been in prison for life or is about to be sentenced for life. And then the judge, right at the last, says, all right, now we're going to actually let you go free if you can assure us that you'll never go back to that old way, your former ways, your sinful ways. I met a man recently that was in prison for life, and he got out on parole. Now he's seeking to become a member of God's family, God's church. And there was obviously a miracle there for God to set him free. But even looking at the system that's in this world, these parole officers, they're not going to just let someone guilty of, you know, a high crime of some kind. They're not just going to let them walk free. If that criminal says, you know what, when I get out of here, I'm going to go right back to what I was doing before. We have been freed from sin. We've been freed from it. And God says, never, never, never go back to it. Never return to it. That would be like a dog returning to its vomit. Verse 10 says, for in that he died once. He died unto sin once. But in that he lives unto God. And so at baptism and beyond, after baptism, your whole approach to life is totally different. You have a whole new approach to life. Your life is unto God. As I say, this represents a complete break. Verse 11 says, likewise, reckon you also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. As you can see at the end of this chapter, the wages of sin is death. But Christ paid for the penalty. And we can claim that upon repentance and faith. Verse 12, it says in the Revised Standard, let not sin therefore reign in your mortal bodies to make you obey their passions. Reign means to rule over you. Don't let sin rule you. Don't let sin or the ways of sin become habitual. So God says here, now we need God. We need God's power. We need Christ in us. But we need to be compliant ourselves. Here, Paul is addressing brethren, and he's saying, look, you make the decision that you're not going to let sin reign over you. You're not going to let sin be your guide. You're going to break free from it with God's help and God's power. Verse 13 in the Moffat, I'll read this. It says, you must not let sin have your members for the service of vice. You must dedicate yourselves to God as men who have been brought from death to life, dedicating your members to God for the service of righteousness. That word, instruments, used in the King James, it actually means weapons. Weapons. You see, our lives, our minds, the members of our body, they can either be used for virtue or vice, one or the other. Mr. Armstrong simplified God's law as being the way of give versus the way of get. It's one or the other. Yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead. That's what it says in the King James there. And it can be used, or that word really should be rendered in the present progressive tense. Be yielding So as I tell the young people I counsel for baptism, look, once you're baptized, really, you become an even bigger target for the devil. He's going to come after you all the more, which is why we have to yield to God, submit to God, as James said, and resist against the devil, and then he'll flee from you. On our own, we're no match for the devil. The devil would devour us instantly. It's God in us. It's God's power that enables us to stand firm, to stand strong, to hold fast. And even there, look at how many tens of thousands of people, true Christians, have just surrendered to the forces of evil, have yielded to the devil, to the ways of sin. Verse 14, it says, "For sin shall not have dominion over you, for you are not under the law, but under grace." You're not under the penalty of the law. That's the meaning. And again, people will take this out of context, or they'll make it say what they want it to say. You're not under the law anymore. It says so in Romans 6:14. We're under grace. Well, we are under grace. Does that mean sin should abound? God forbid. It also says that in this chapter, doesn't it? We can actually be freed from the penalty of the law, which is eternal death. If we claim that sacrifice of Christ, if we turn to God in humility and repentance, if we tell God, "I've had it with that old way of life. Here is my decision. I want to make a complete break, and I'm going to need your power to help me sever those ties for sure. But this is my decision." And for those that would distort and twist the meaning of verse 14, as I often say in my epistles class, read on. What does it say in the next verse? Verse 15 says, "What then? Shall we say, because we are not under the law but under grace? Shall we sin, because we are not under law but under grace? God forbid." God forbid that we should sin because we're somehow not under the penalty of the law anymore. Well, we aren't under that penalty. And we are going to slip up and fall from time to time. But God's looking at our heart. God's looking at the direction of our lives. Are you in the fight? Are you resisting against the devil? Are you going to God for help and for power when you weaken? Herbert Armstrong used to talk about how that he just never would compromise with God's law. And even still, he got to the end of his life, his physical life, and said, after all these years, I think maybe I'm 51% spiritual and 49% carnal. It's a battle. It's a battle all the way to the end. And we've got to get to the finish line with God's help. We can do it. We can do it with God's help and power, for sure. But with men left to themselves, it's impossible. Verse 16. It says, "Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants you are, to whom you obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness?" Moffat says, "Do you not know your servants of the master you obey?" If you're obeying sin, you're just serving sin. You're living in sin. You're in captivity. But if you're obeying God's laws, you're free. If you're obeying the law of liberty, you've been freed from captivity. You've been freed from sin and all of its ill effects. For much, much more on this subject, contact our operator, 1-866-930-3024. Request Mystery of the Ages. I mentioned the Trumpet magazine. You can become a Trumpet subscriber. Tomorrow's news today, there's so much more we could offer, but we're out of time at the moment. So you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Send us some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.